Chapter 8.
"If your friend doesn't want to miss his chance, he'd better get out here soon," grumbled Gorm.
"Oh, simmer down," said Bert. "I'm sure he's just seeing to business."
"I assumed we were the business he planned to see to," Jin said. Gorm snorted and looked around the yard. To the east, Perrault was lit by manifold torches, lanterns, and braziers, and the city glimmered like an inverted chandelier set upon the grassy plain. It might have been a pretty sight at another time, but for now the city's warm glow was just a reminder how cold and damp it was behind the stables of Beedren's dream.
"Hey, I know we're tossing him some coin, but trips to taverns are busy for a handbag performer," Bert told him. "He's still got a day job to keep."
"Of a sort," said Heraldin. Laruna snickered.
"Yeah, go on and laugh. If I thought it was a respectable career, I wouldn't have left it."
Bert looked back at the inn, and Gorm thought he saw a hint of wistfulness in the kobold's eye.
"But bagging is hard work. You've got to be ready to perform at any moment, always ready to babble like a pup, or do a happy dance, or look cute while you eat something. And gods forbid your lady sees something cuter while she's out and about, because if she does, you'll be on the street the next day."
The kobold shook his head and scratched his ear sheepishly, remembering himself.
"So yeah, give the guy some slack. He's got a lot to do in there."
"So would you say he's working like a dog?" quipped Heraldin.
"Not if I was tall and pink and liked breathing," Bert growled, rolling up the sleeve of his tiny tunic.
"Someone's coming," said Katha, perking up.
"That's enough, out of both of you,"
Gorm told the bard and kobold.
"Indeed, half of the inn probably heard you,"
said a small voice. The kobold with the strangely colored hair sauntered around the corner of the stables.
"And given how problematic it would be if I were to be seen with a gaggle of wanted criminals, I must insist that you make some attempt to be discreet."
"Hello, Morty,"
Bert spoke in a level voice with a polite smile, but Gorm could see his friend's hackles rising.
"Bertrick,"
Morty acknowledged. Bert waved an arm back at the rest of the party.
"Folks, this is Morty, and this here's Gorm, and—"
"Please, Bertrick, the less I know about you outlaws, the better. And if you must use my name, call me Tenide."
"What?"
asked Bert.
"I prefer to go by my elven name now,"
said Morty airily.
"Jaleef Talel Tenide."
"Well, well, Morty's gone native," said Bert. "Look at this guy. Back in the day we ran in the same pack. Now I have to go through three people to send you a thrice-cursed note, and he's too good for the name his mother gave him."
Morty shrugged off Bert's comments with an amused smile and turned to Katha.
"It's the latest trend,"
he confided to her.
"Any kobold worth a purse these days is fluent in elven. Of course, those that can't keep up with fashion, well..."
He looked at Bert with a mixture of mock sympathy and cruel glee.
"I see,"
said Katha diplomatically.
"I left the job on my own, and you know it."
Bert was trying to hold back his temper and clearly failing.
"Oh, what a coincidence, then, that so many of the Shadowkin in your Freedlands made the same choice,"
said Morty.
"I always told you to come to Ruskin, much more stable, and it's the true seat of the elven elite."
"Psh!" scoffed Bert. "If your elf is so great, why'd she wind up in this joint with all the other would-be nobles?"
"Oh, come now, Bertrick,"
Morty said with a patronizing smile.
"Surely you know they've come ganking."
"They've come what?"
Gorm asked.
"Ganking? Slumming? You know, top-tier girl and her bottom-tier man, as they say in Andoran."
Morty looked surprised by the blank stares on the heroes' faces.
"When my mistress and her companions get bored with high society,"
he said slowly,
"they like to find some undesirable establishment and seek out someone far beneath their level for a bit of fun."
"That's disgusting," said Katha.
"Isn't it, though?"
laughed Morty.
"The mistress bathes for half a day straight afterward."
Katha scowled.
"That's not what I—"
"You must excuse me," said Heraldin, stepping away from the wall and trotting briskly toward the inn.
"Where are you going?"
Gorm demanded. "Oh, we all know where I'm going," Heraldin called over his shoulder. "If I'm not back in an hour, I'll see you at breakfast." He disappeared around the corner of the stable with a flourish.
"Puffed up git,"
Gorm grumbled after him.
"Also disgusting," said Katha. "Listen, Bertrick, I'm 10 minutes into a 20-minute break,"
said Morty, flipping a sky-blue curl with his paw.
"Do you want to talk about these artifacts or not?"
"We do,"
Gorm interjected with a firm stare at Bert.
"Good,"
said Morty.
I must say you asked about a strange collection of items. I can't help but wonder what the connection between them is.
We're to be discreet here, if you recall, said Gorm.
True enough. You're also to pay up front, if memory serves.
The brightly colored kobold waited for Gorm to toss a pouch of coins at his feet. Once he had hefted the purse onto his back, he pulled a small list from the pocket of his vest.
First of all, the Ring of Nine Faces is currently in the Emperor's personal collection at the heart of the Imperial City.
Halfway across the world in the vault of an emperor, muttered Gorm.
He crossed it off the mental list of prospective artifacts.
The Rod of Seven Pieces isn't around anymore,
said Morty.
It was in an accident when a Noctomancer down in Umbrax tried to experiment on it. It's the rod of about 300 pieces now.
Jin scratched at his goatee.
I didn't think destroying such a relic was possible.
You can be quite confident that my information is accurate, said Morty. My mistress sits on the Ruskin Committee overseeing the Heroes Guild's handling of dangerous loot.
A ceremonial position,
Bert interrupted.
A prestigious position,
Morty said with a sniff.
I saw the record myself. The rod's a pile of splinters.
Fair enough, said Gorm. What's next?
The Horn of Gygaxon is sealed away beneath the Heroes Guild's great vault in Enderin.
I'd rather try our chances with the Emperor, said Laruna. Gorm couldn't help but agree. The Heroes Guild had many offices scattered about the Freedland's capital, but its treasury was located in the most secure depths of the Palace of Enderin. Given that the guild took a cut of every quest fee, hero's pay, and treasure hoard, the sums of money contained in the Great Vault were inconceivable to Gorm. He'd heard that its treasure was more magnificent than even King Handor's. Certainly it was better protected. No organization was more familiar with the varied traps that could be set for plundering intruders than the Heroes Guild.
Aye, best to pass over any that are with the guild, said Gorm.
Morty glanced at his page.
In that case, this is going to be a short list.
What, they're all in Enderin's Great Vault? Asked Laruna.
Four more are, said Morty, and three are with the guild in Edelmon, and two more in the guild's holdings in Knife Vale.
Is there anything that the Heroes Guild doesn't have?
Gorm said, trying to ignore the knots his stomach was tying itself into.
No,
said Morty.
Funny thing, the Heroes Guild is remarkably effective at acquiring powerful magical items. Although...
Aye?
Well, the Wormwood Staff of Geffen is usually in the Guild's Great Vault as well, said Morty. But this year, it's on loan to the Museum of Enderin for an exhibit on Omnimancy.
That's not much better, said Jin. It's still in the heart of Enderin, and heavily guarded.
Less heavily guarded, though, said Laruna thoughtfully, and a lot fewer traps.
Yeah, traps would be bad for attendance, smirked Bert.
Well, it sounds like you've found the one for whatever it is you're going to do.
Morty folded up his note and handed it to Gorm.
And the less I know about that, the happier we'll all be. So I must bid you farewell.
Yeah, yeah. So long, Morty, said Bert. Good to see you and all that.
I'm sure it was,
said Morty, tossing a coiffed tuft of purple hair out of his eye.
And I'm sure you'll find a real job and get back on your feet soon. Surely some elf from Vetchel would love a bargain for her purse.
Shut it, yipped Bert. I was just trying to be polite.
Were you?
Smirked Morty as he sauntered away.
Well, that's personal growth. Goodbye, Bertrick.
Bert watched him go, his tiny frame shaking with fury.
That mangy, flea-riddled... Ah, don't mind him, said Gorm, giving the kobold a pat on the shoulder.
Yeah, said Laruna. He's just jealous, because you're free now.
No, he ain't, said Bert, shaking his head. He's eating fancy food and going to big parties and getting paid to do it. And if he ever wished he didn't have to perform like that, well, now he sees what's on the other side.
Bert, said Katha.
You got it backward, Bert barked, choking back a sob. I wish I wasn't jealous of him, but I am. Gods, I am!
Hey, come on, said Katha, dropping down on one knee. You're doing work that matters here. You're standing up for the little guys. I mean, in more ways than one.
I know. Sorry, said Bert, wiping his eyes. Listen, I know what'll make you feel better, interjected Gorm. I took a peek in the stables, and those elven popinjays that Morty rides with strutted in here on some of the finest elven steeds I ever laid eyes on. What do you say we go steal them horses, eh?
A little glimmer returned to Bert's eyes, and it was hard to say if it was hope or malice.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, I'd like that. Sure you would, said Katha, giving Bert a friendly pat.
All right, you heard the kobold, Gorm announced. Someone go pull the bard off of whatever elf he's latched onto. We've got to get to Andorin, and there ain't no time to waste.
There's just not enough time,
Dwinpoldo said, tossing a parchment back on the stack.
There aren't enough hours in the day to get all of this done.
Mrs. Herc said nothing in reply, and it took Poldo a moment to recall that she had gone home a few hours ago. Poldo wiped his spectacles and rubbed his eyes before having a look at the page again. The letters all seemed to run together in the candlelight. He thought about packing the paperwork up and taking it back home, but he quickly dismissed the idea. Once he got home, he wouldn't have the energy to do anything but collapse on his bed. Besides, Mrs. Herc was probably helping Barga with the renovations in the new apartment by now. Poldo hadn't expected to buy the apartment next door to his own, but then he had only expected a pair of goblins to show up for a few nights. It was his own fault, he reflected. Goblins never did anything in small numbers if they could help it. Shortly after Barga and her mate arrived, the entire Firehawk tribe showed up on his doorstep. He didn't have enough space for them all, and the neighbor on his floor was threatening to complain about all of the Shadowkin. Yet a liberal application of money can fix most problems, and Poldo resolved both issues with a single check. Of course, now the Firehawks were telling more Shadowkin about the Scribkin who was providing lodging and even hiring for odd jobs. Mrs. Herc was already dropping hints about a few orcs who needed a place to stay. Poldo had even pondered buying more apartments, or even the whole building. The gods knew he could afford it now, but such a purchase just meant more paperwork and more time. Poldo sighed and tried to dive back into preparing yet another threat obligation. Kindness and success shared the same problem. They both set expectations. Expectations that such charity or prosperity could be easily duplicated, or that they would be constant, or that they were just milestones in an endless line of goals and objectives. He couldn't keep pace, and he didn't have time to hire help beyond Mrs. Herc and Vilga of the Firehawk, who had happily proven to be well-versed in bookkeeping. His quill had just touched the threat obligation form when a tiny squeak hailed from the edge of his perception. Poldo might have dismissed the sound as a mouse or other pest, but something in its cadence suggested that someone was deliberately clearing a very tiny throat. He looked up. At the far corner of his desk, a diminutive wood gnome crept out from behind Poldo's inbox. The tiny man was draped in the pelt of a red squirrel, with the tail dragging behind him and the skull acting as a macabre headdress. A pair of glinting eyes and a turnip-shaped nose were crammed between the squirrel mask and the wood gnome's bushy white beard.
Hello there, said Poldo carefully.
The wood gnome wearing the red squirrel was the first domovoy to willingly show himself to Poldo. He had never heard of wood gnomes making any sort of contact with bigger folk, except to highlight cohabitation disputes through vandalism. The air was still. Tense. Sacred. The spell was broken as the tiny gnome burst into a series of high-pitched squeaks and squeals, waving his hands emphatically.
"I beg your pardon?" said Poldo.
The wood gnome nodded, then piped something unintelligible over his shoulder. As silent as shadows, dozens of domovoi slipped out from behind the piles of paper. Poldo could feel several small weights land on the back of his chair, and as he turned, he could see hundreds of eyes gleaming from every nook and cranny in the shed. It occurred to Poldo that he had grossly underestimated the population of his office.
Hello to all of you as well, he gulped.
The wood gnomes had dark, shining eyes and silver hair, even the children. The men wore long beards and the women long braids, and every one of them was clad in the pelt of some unfortunate rodent or another. They stared at Poldo with a stoic intensity until he shifted in his seat. Red Squirrel chirruped something again, but it was too high and quiet for Poldo to make out more than a piping rhythm. A moment later, however, the assembled wood gnomes sang out in long, high notes,
"Thank you, Mr. Poldo!" "Uh-huh. You're welcome, I suppose,"
said Poldo. Red Squirrel squeaked again, and the Domovoy chorused,
"For defeating the poison giant."
"The poison? The exterminator, last week. No, no need to thank me for that. Anyone would have done it. It's common decency."
Poldo's nervous smile faded as he considered that idea for a moment.
"Or it should be, anyway."
There was a blur of motion and a few clinking sounds. A mug of hot water, a box of herbal tea, and a tin of Redwall's candied nut shortbreads appeared on Poldo's desk.
"Oh," said Poldo, taking a shortbread to be polite. "Well, this is much appreciated, especially with such a long night ahead of me."
The wood gnomes moved faster than Poldo's eyes could see. In an instant, the herbal tea was whisked away. A moment later, it was replaced by a jar of Poldo's favorite instant coffee, Eldrith's Black Grounds.
"Yes, that's lovely, thank you," said Poldo. "If only you could organize these orders," he quipped, nodding to one of the overflowing bins of paper on the edge of his desk.
The words weren't yet out of Poldo's mouth when the wood gnomes on his desk clapped three times in unison. On the third clap, the Domovoy launched themselves into the pile of paperwork, chittering and squeaking at each other so rapidly that their tiny voices blended into a high-pitched buzzing sound. The stack of papers wobbled and rocked unsteadily, pages swirling around it in a rustling storm of documents. A few moments later, the wood gnomes leapt from the stack, clapped three more times, and all pointed proudly at the rearranged pile.
"Ta-da!"
they chorused. Poldo lifted the top page of the stack with trembling hands. It was a company profile for Adventure Capital, followed by Always Gold Incorporated, and then Armed Conflict Unlimited.
Thank you, he said carefully. But really, I need to sort them by the opportunity each company presents, not alphabetically.
Buy low, sell high,
sang the wood gnomes. Three claps. Another whirlwind of activity snatched the paper from Poldo's hands and rearranged the inbox. Three claps again. Poldo looked through the documents on top of the pile. The first was a profile of Goldson Bags, followed by Lamia Sisters, and then other large financial companies. Now he could focus on writing the most profitable threat obligations first and leave the bottom of the pile for another night. He might even make it to bed by midnight. A smile spread across Poldo's face as he turned to Red Squirrel.
"What's your hourly rate?"
he asked.
"Much better than I expected."
Gorm scanned the horizon while his jaw worked over a bit of grouse.
"At this rate, we'll make Andoran in just a few days."
Katha nodded and picked at a bone.
"This sort of speed is typical when you're riding Shadeweir. Our legends hold that they're descended from the King of Horses. The blood of unicorns flows through their veins, and they're bred in moonlight so that Alunathaliel will bless them and give them the gift of the wind. They're a great treasure of my people."
"Aye, they're fine mounts."
Gorm watched the elven steeds grazing in the plains a short distance from the cookfire. They looked like someone took war horses and sanded them down to optimize aerodynamics. The mares and stallions stared back at the dwarf with a discernible smugness.
"No, I mean literally," said the elf. "One of these is worth about 50,000 gilton. We've committed grand theft here."
"That crime pales compared to the theft we're planning," said Jin.
"For a good cause," said Gorm. "Besides, these horses were worth it." "Yeah, all right, fine. I think we've heard enough about how rich Morty's elf was," said Bert.
He nudged Geist's elbow.
"You going to eat that drumstick?"
The weapons master's eyes flicked to the kobold.
"All right, easy,"
said Bert, paws in the air. Gorm hurried to finish his dinner and clean his dishes. The days of late meltwater were marked by spring's warmth driving back the snow, but the biting cold returned each evening with a vengeance. Beyond the chill, however, there were more pressing reasons to get into his tent before Bert finished eating.
"It's been a while," Gorm muttered to himself.
He pulled the leather-bound tome from the parcel in his rucksack and pushed down the old pain that rose in his throat. Blinking, he opened to the third chapter of the Book of Lothal. "Tears flow like a river. The river becomes a song. The song rises from cursed stones. The stones cannot be stopped." Gorm cross-referenced the notes that Niln had written in the book's margins.
"What does that mean?"
"My sentiments exactly," said Gorm.
He looked at the next note. It was written in haste, a sprawling scribble across the page.
Destiny cannot be forced or negotiated with or convinced. Second Book of Epath, Chapter 9, Verse 7.
You were always trying to anyway, Gorm said to Niln.
He found another note written in Niln's more typical, tight, neat script.
Once I can explain how this fits together, the others will see the path we must walk. Perhaps then they will not fight their destiny so much.
Gorm smirked. Aye, you always wanted us to...
He lost the words in a muffled choke as he read another thought Niln had scrawled in the far margin.
Perhaps then Gorm might not think me such a fool.
I didn't think you a fool.
Gorm could manage little more than a hoarse whisper.
Well, no, I did, but you were the good kind of fool. The kind we need more of, all ideals and courage. The kind I miss every...
He couldn't find any words to say, and it struck him anew that there wasn't anyone around to hear them. The book felt heavy as he closed it and set it on his lap, resting his hands gently on the pebbled leather cover. He remained at the edge of his tent for a long time, listening to the crackle of the cook fire and watching the stars wink into sight.
"I'm sorry for being so disheveled. I just wasn't expecting this," said Jin, struggling to pull on his robe.
"I know it's late," said Laruna.
She stood outside the Noctomancer's tent, pretending to take an interest in the fog of her breath. To the north, the moonlit plains of Aberyth spread out like a sea of grass, dotted with archipelagos of trees and rocky outcroppings.
"It's not so much the hour. I haven't had many visits from you," said Jin, stepping from the tent.
"Yeah, well, we need to get something straight," said Laruna. "Come on."
She led him away from camp, waving to Haraldin and Gaist as they started their shift of the night's watch. It took a few minutes to reach a thicket of wild hedges, where the Solomancer found a granite outcropping to sit on.
"I've been thinking about you lately," Laruna said. "A lot."
And I you," Jin confessed with a trembling voice.
"Yeah, I mean..."
Laruna trailed off, and it took a moment for her to get back on track.
"Listen, I hate secrets. I hate them more when they're between people who are supposed to be a team or in in a relationship. It's like they're hiding from each other, holding back who they really are. It's like a lie without the words."
"I know," said Jin. "And I am sorry that I kept my father's identity from you."
"Yeah," said Laruna, "but I'm starting to see, that you can't tell everyone everything. You have to trust people to tell you what they need to, if you want to be a friend to them."
"Really?"
A shadow of a smile appeared on the Noctomancer's face.
"Really."
Laruna rested her hand on his.
"And what you told me about your father's schemes, about him becoming a lich, you must have suspected something even long ago."
"I suppose so," said Jin. "I saw some of his experiments. He had guests that frightened me, and they were frightened of him. We all were."
"You couldn't tell us that, though,"
said Laruna. She picked up his hand and held it in her own.
"That was what you were holding back, wasn't it? When I asked if you had any secrets left, that's what you couldn't say."
Jin's eyes flashed in the moonlight.
"Laruna, I
don't care if you keep things from the party or anyone else,"
the Solomancer said.
"I'll keep them with you. But I want more from you than everyone else, Jin or Mayan. I want no more secrets between us, no matter what they are. Just tell me now and get them out of my way."
The wizard licked his lips before speaking slowly, carefully. I knew Father was a necromancer, and I helped him with some of his experiments."
"It doesn't even bother me,"
said Laruna, grinning at the truth of it.
"Anything else?"
Jin rubbed his bald head.
"Well, no, but..."
She cut him off with a long kiss and felt his surprised resistance melt away. By the time they broke apart, the wizard could only stare at her, breathless.
"Come on," she said. "I want to show you something."
The Noctomancer wore a witless grin as she led him around the outcropping.
"Where are we going?"
"Not far now," said Laruna. "We need to be out of sight of the camp."
Well, I really wasn't expecting this, Jin babbled, and bear in mind that it's very chilly this evening.
We're here.
Once inside the shadows of the trees, Laruna turned to the wizard and took his hands in her own.
No more secrets between us, right?
No more secrets. I swear it, he said, leaning in to kiss her again.
Good, she told him. Then there's someone I want you to meet. Come on out.
Who are you? Who? Who? Ha! Ha! Language failed the wizard as a nearby boulder began to move, wrapping and twisting into a massive troll.
Jin, said Laruna, this is Thane.
Ha! Oh! Oh, gods! Jin stood rigid and trembling as he stared up at the troll with wide eyes.
He's doing that thing, said Thane, the physiological reaction thing.
Listen, Jin, Thane is a friend.
Laruna spoke slowly for emphasis.
He's my friend.
It's just not what I was expecting, said Jin vacantly. He shook his head.
This was a bad idea, said Thane.
No, no, this is fine, said the Solomancer. Jin, he's been protecting us from monsters, but it's more than that. He's nothing like other trolls.
Jin didn't even acknowledge her. Really, really not what I was expecting, he said.
Actually, that's not fair, said Laruna, turning to Thane. I've never really met any other trolls. Maybe quite a few of them are just misunderstood, you know?
Well, not in my experience, said Thane. Most of the trolls I've met are horrible. But I suppose they could become better under the right circumstances.
It's almost the exact opposite of what I was expecting, said Jin.
Exactly. They might just be conforming to society's expectations, said Laruna. I mean, I don't know how I would respond if everyone either screamed and ran away or tried to kill me at first sight.
That does sound a lot like my life, said Thane.
Defies expectations, said Jin, lost in a parallel conversation.
And I am sorry about that again, Laruna told the troll. It is remarkable how well you've adjusted. Maybe you had a better upbringing than other trolls?
Upbringing, said Thane. Troll mothers leave their infants on the forest floor to fend for themselves.
Leaving babies in the... That's horrible, exclaimed Laruna.
Well, yes. There you are, said Thane. That's what I was saying.
Why would anyone expect this? Said Jin, a hint of manic laughter creeping into his voice.
Well, whatever other trolls are like, it doesn't matter. The point is, you're a friend, said Laruna. Jin, slow breaths. He won't hurt us. Thane has been helping us since before the Battle of Bloodroot. Gorm has been working with him.
Pleased to meet you,
Thane ventured, extending a meaty paw. Just never would have... Who? Jin absently set a limp hand in the troll's palm.
How long do you think he'll be like this?
Thane muttered to Laruna.
A while yet, she said, giving the Noctomancer's head an affectionate rub. But he'll come around soon enough.